from NPR Music. You're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. Today on our show, Jack White. There's a new sonically brilliant album coming from Jack White on June 10th, and it's called Lazaretto. And we wanted to talk to him about how it came to be. The interview took place while I was in Philadelphia at WXPN. Jack White was in Nashville. We talked about how songs were written, how he used old poems and words from when he was 19 years old for inspiration. We talk about the nature of fate and coincidence, why he rarely writes anything down, and about the happy accidents that helped make this record so great.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. How's your day so far? How many interviews?
No, just one before this. That was it.
Oh, that's good.
All. I'm going back to the studio after this.
What are you going to do in the studio today?
I'm doing a B-side for the next single.
Do you go in oftentimes with other folks? You go in alone? What are you up to today?
My band's in town. We're rehearsing to go play shows. So today, but today we're taking a break, and I'm just going to record things today that. Sometimes you have to get caught up. But when you start playing together and rehearsing, you just come up with ideas, and then at some point you have to take a day, like, I want to record a few things because I keep thinking of new ideas now that we've been playing music all day long every day. You have to take a break and record, I think, is good for me to capture some of that stuff before I forget about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you good at remembering, or how do you remember?
Best thing for me to do is to play it on a different instrument. If I play writing something on a guitar, I really like that. Oh, go over and play it on the piano, and then for some reason my brain won't remember that. But
it's sort of the equivalent then of just writing it down in some way, maybe. There's some muscle memory, something or connection.
I've never been good at writing things down. I don't know. I always lose the paper, but I don't know what it is. I don't keep a book with me. It's not good. I don't like to carry anything with me. I don't have a cell phone, and I don't like to carry a wallet with me if I can help it. I just don't like to have things in my hands like that.
What about the idea of rough recording all that you do and then going back? Is that just too much weight, too much baggage?
Well, the problem with that, with my personality, is I'm the kind of guy, like, if I took a roll of film and it got developed and came back, I would take out the two photos that are good and I throw away all the rest. I don't like bad photos being there when there's one good one that's so great. You know, you should take that one out and frame it and throw the rest of them away so nobody else would find them. And, of course, this is, you know, don't ever do that in front of a female. They'll just go run screaming, diving. Why? Girls can't stand that for some reason. I don't know why. Guys are like, whatever, set them on fire. Who cares?
I can think of a couple of pack rat guys.
Okay. Up there. No, but particularly for photographs, though, I don't know.
Oh, I see. That's a different connection. Yeah. It's not just about matter of items.
Hoarding.
Yeah. I've been really enjoying the record. You must. I could tell you had fun making it. I hear it in the voice. I hear it in the playing. It feels nicely inspired. I want to go run through, if we can, we just run through some songs. I'll play little bits. I'll have your microphone open the whole time, and you can interject, or I can prod some ideas, or we'll see what happens. I'm going to play the first thing I heard on the record and play a little highball stepper. Actually, I'm even going to stop it right away because you must tell me what's going on, like the first 12 seconds of this song.
This was, we had a day off in touring, and I wanted to get some stuff on tape. And this was an idea I just had before we started playing in the studio. And I gave this steel guitar player, Maggie Bjorklund, these are all the girls playing on this track. And I gave her a backwards pedal that takes whatever you put into it and plays it backwards. Uh-huh. I thought, well, what happens if you play steel guitar into a backwards pedal like that and see what happens? And she was messing around with it. And by the time she had done that, Lily May was tuning up her fiddle.
Lily May
and she played the fiddle, and she made some sound effect while she was tuning up, and it sounded something like, you know, that thing you're hearing.
Oh.
And I thought, hold on a second, come here. And I played the guitar, and I was playing that, and I kept thinking of that little phrase. So I asked her and Ruby, the vocalist, to make that sound effect together while we're playing this song. And it became something very grandiose, fast.
Let's hear it a little. Did you imagine ever putting words to this? Because this is the this is an instrumental track.
At first, I thought because that this effect, maybe people don't even know what's making that sound.
Right. Well,
that will be our vocals for the song, and we don't need to write any. I thought, oh, that'll be great. And then I thought later on, maybe it's not powerful enough. And I started to think of different ideas for vocals. But then every time I played someone, I said I would play someone, oh, here's this song, I'm going to put some vocals on it, I think. And they would say, oh, my God, that's my favorite thing of the things you played me. And they already liked it. I said, well, if you like it already, then I'm going to try to fix it. You know.
You've always been such a lover of word. They're really good lyrics on this record. One of the fun things I've had to do in the last few days is spend some time with the words. I remember once somebody telling me a story. Maybe it was you told me this story. I can't remember. That you used to, as an upholsterer, would write notes, listen to NPR, write notes, and stuff them in the couches and chairs.
Yeah.
That's
right.
But I'm also told on this record that you found a series of old writings of your own. Tell me about that.
This was, I had a new problem with these songs is that I recorded the music and I didn't write vocals parts for them or lyrics for some of these songs for maybe 7 or 8 months. So I was in a real bind. I've become disconnected with the music to start thinking about what stories make sense and what characters can go involved in this. I'm so far away from them. I've never been in this position before because I'd never worked on an album this long before. So I was getting very frustrated with the idea of, oh my God, I can't imagine sitting down and trying to sing to this song. If now it's someone else's song.
Huh.
I have to pretend it's someone else's, and I have to cover this song and collaborate with them. Yeah. And I had found these scribble writings or whatever when I was 19, and these one-act plays and whatever they were, poems, and they weren't very good. They were just sort of a person without any experience in life, but with, you know, a lot of fire inside of me about couldn't wait to break out of the house and get something done, go somewhere, see something. And I thought, well, I would like the photographs I told you before. I think I'm just going to throw away all these and keep one or two of them that were interesting. And I thought, well, you know, why don't I pull some of these characters out, some of these names, some of these sentences, and work with them. And I did, and it became a way to collaborate with my younger self. That's how I'll do these vocals on these songs. I'm going to collaborate with the 19-year-old version of me, which is half my age right now. And I have experience now. What would I be telling myself? How to do it? If I could go back and say, no, this is how you write a song, and tell myself, this is how you do it, and these are how you work with metaphors. Try it like this. So that became the way I got out of that bind.
First of all, how the hell did you throw these away? I know it's like the photographs, but I'm going to be the woman there screaming at the photographs. How do you take writings that you do when you're a kid and just toss them? I don't comprehend
it. It's better to not see them. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I've always been that way. You know,
but what if you did that when you were 20 and then you wouldn't have had these?
To throw them all away would be a bad idea.
Okay.
But you just take what makes the most sense, what's the beautiful aspect of it, take that out, and the rest can, you know, be set on fire because they'll ruin the one good thing. You know, that's why I think bad photographs in an envelope ruin the one beautiful photograph, because when you see the beautiful one and people want to keep digging through the other photos and say, oh, maybe there's one that's better. No, there's not one that's better. It's just this one. And then, take for example right now, if you found a bag of Jimi Hendrix photos of him, you're going to print every single one of them because it's a bag of photos of Jimi Hendrix. How many, you know, when are you going to see this again? You're not going to take out the one good one and put it.
That's right. I'm not burning.
You're going to print all of them, and you probably have an art show and sell each one of them, you know. But I'm sure he would be like, oh my God, there's one good one in here and that's it, you know. And so that's the funny thing.
Yeah, no, it's a really hard discipline. The idea that reconnecting with yourself when you're 19, what did you see in your writings that you did like? What was it about yourself then that you thought there was something there?
It's a lust for life, but with, you know, no experience. It's a different place to be in. Now I start to write and I think about these characters and where they could go, and I think, oh, well, this person would do that. But the harsh reality is when that person gets to the end of that tunnel, there's nothing there, you know, something like that. Whereas when I was writing when I was 19, I thought, oh, no, when you get to that end of the tunnel, there's something beautiful and romantic might happen there. And it goes to another level. And now it's hard. I have to talk myself out of the harsh reality of that. Over the years, you know, your romance becomes tempered by realism, and you have to figure out a balance of keeping yourself positive and outlook in life, but knowing in the back of your head that there could be a bad ending to this.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
It reminds me of this Richard Thompson song, "There's Nothing at the End of the Rainbow," but nothing. He sings this song. I don't know if you ever heard the song, Richard Thompson song. He sings this song to his newborn, which may have been Teddy, I don't know, but there's nothing at the end of the rainbow, there's nothing to look out to anymore. And it's like, oh my God, how can you do that? How can you sing that song to a child? Anyway, on another note, let me play Lazaretto. Okay, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
I fail Spanish all the time, but it's something about working in wood and something like it. What's the Spanish say?
Oh, this was a rhyme about, you know, the braggadocio of sort of some hip hop lyrics, that the bragging about oneself in hip hop music. Uh-huh. I thought about the character who's singing this song is bragging about himself, but he's actually bragging about real things he's actually accomplished, and real things that he actually does, not imaginary things or things he would like to do. Because sometimes you see people who, you know, who they sing from the heart nowadays or something. They're singing from the heart. They're talking about themselves or their whatever, but they haven't done anything, you know, and their lives are not very interesting or whatever. So this character in this song actually has worked very hard in his life, and he's done some interesting things. So in order to say, you can't say a lyric like "I work hard," you know. I mean,
right.
King came away with saying that. So I had to change it to Spanish. So "Yo trabajo duro," say "I worked hard," and "I work hard," like in wood and plaster, you know. And in the, this is a triple meaning of that wood and plaster are hard surfaces, and that it's hard, as if a painter who works in oils. It's sort of bad Spanish because you wouldn't say como for that word, like as in the phrase as in.
Uh-huh.
Like I as in I work in oils or I work in watercolors. He works hard as in wood and plaster. Yeah, so
this song takes a dark turn to a place talking about being quarantined on the Isle of Man, trying to escape any way you can. I think was a rhyme. And I want to talk about what a Lazaretto is. Let the people get a little more flavor of the song. So tell me what it means if they threw me down in a lazaretto earlier in the song, born rotten, bored rotten.
There's something funny. Someone told me that there's a lyric in there where this character says, they threw me down in a lazaretto, making models of people I used to know out of coffee and cotton. And I was, this is the only thing that I know on this album that I really put in there of my own personality. There's a song called Black Bat Licorice too, and where I talk about being confined in a prison or a hospital. Yeah. And that's why I named the album Lazaretto, is that that really is me personally, my sort of fantasy that I wish that I would, some other forces, powers that be, would push me in a scenario for a month and lock me somewhere instead of me doing it to myself all the time. I'm always self-imposing restrictions on myself. And so I guess my fantasy all the time is, oh, it'd be so nice to be in a quarantine hospital, but, you know, not to die from it, but just to know that I have to stay here for 2 months and I can't do anything else. So
a lazaretto was a place where they took people who, for some reason, disease or whatever. You explain.
Yeah, it's a word for like a quarantine hospital, you know, or quarantine island or something like that. And it's a beautiful sounding word too, lazaretto, coming from Lazarus, I guess. And But what's funny, someone sent me this thing. I had that lyric that making models of people I used to know out of coffee and cotton. And to me, it was just revolving around maybe two or three meanings, such as, you know, I'm drinking so much coffee all day long and I'm resting on these cotton sheets and pillows. I'm smothering my face in cotton all day long. But at the same time, I'm also taking the coffee grounds and creating little sculptures out of them. This is the few materials that I have in the room together that if you just give me a couple, pieces of slivers of wood and some metal shavings, I will be forced to create something in this room under this condition. But someone sent me this beautiful thing that someone had found in an interview, that one of the West Memphis Three, those people who got put into jail unjustly, in jail, he was making drawings with Q-tips and coffee grounds. And I couldn't believe it, man. I was like, now I couldn't even defend you. He's like, oh, that's where you got that idea. I was like, well, man, I'm going to argue with you now. I never heard of that, but that's unbelievable coincidence. I couldn't believe that. I mean, that's one of the most biggest coincidences I've ever had in my life. So I really like that lyric now even more.
What do you make of coincidences? And I deal with this a lot, wondering about fate and where is fate? Is there fate? Do things happen for reason, for purpose, or do you just put two things together and make a purpose from them?
This is the most beautiful and the most scientifically sort of sad thing about that topic is that. But when I was younger, you know, it was about, I had heard about synchronicity when things are happening at the same time, that everything's going the right way. You know, you went to someone's house and they're watching the same TV show you were just talking about in the car. I had this unbelievable thing happen. This will be my maybe second favorite coincidence. I was in line at a drive-through coffee place in Detroit, it's like 10 years ago. And I was telling somebody in line while I was paying for coffee. You know that in World War II that they couldn't make pennies out of copper. They had to make them out of steel or aluminum. Like, I think they're called steel pennies, but I don't think they're actually steel because they needed steel too. I think they're made out of, you know, whatever, zinc or aluminum or something like that. But they weren't copper. And someone was telling me, oh, that's interesting, whatever. 24 hours later, in that exact same line, again, my morning ritual, getting coffee in this drive-thru, I'm getting coffee again and with the same person sitting next to me, and I'm given change. I'm given a steel penny from 1942. Oh. Yeah. I was like, come on. I mean, there's just no way. I haven't been given one of these that's changed in 10 years or something. So, unbelievable coincidence. But I read this article a couple years ago about that scientifically, though, that our brain, we have to create patterns. We look for patterns of similarity all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to find things that are similar so that our brain can make sense of them. And that, shockingly, is like the seed of a lot of romantic ideas for a lot of people on a day-to-day basis, and for a lot of artists, you know, that it was meant to be. But actually, it's our brain focusing on patterns, trying to discover patterns all the time. And it's a little bit sad to say that, so I hate even saying that out loud because it kind of kills a lot of romance things.
But it does, but when those moments happen, it's really difficult to let go of the romance of it.
Oh, I think we shouldn't. You know, God, what else? We got nothing else to talk about.
Would you rather be someone take you for a month and put you on that island? Or what would be the difference of you doing that and someone making you
do that? You can't really do it. You know, I used to say when...
That's it.
Whenever I had a lot of... I have a lot of problems going on. You know, and they're so bizarre and they're piling up on each other. I used to think, you know, or say out loud to someone, like, well, God, I wish my leg was broken. At least then I'd know what the problem was, you know. And you'd say, okay, my leg's broken. I can't walk. I have to wait 6 weeks now. Done. You know, but all the other kind of problems in life, you know, they can be vague and they're unsolvable and you can't get your head around them. And they're imposed by these ridiculous things, not problems you want to have. They're not good problems. So that's what I guess that fantasy comes for me, is to wanting to be, you know, kind of being in the Marine Corps or being in prison or something like that. Something where someone else told me that I have to be in this spot and you can't leave. That would be a nice thing for me.
So you get it. You do an astonishing amount of stuff done. Are you hard on yourself?
It's self-imposed, though. It's self-imposed. That's the difference.
Uh-huh. I'll play another song. Play Temporary Ground.
Moving over slowly sideways, restless temporary creatures spending all of their day waiting for the floor to buckle down below their belts, crashing into yet another drifting continental sound.
Moving with that motion, screaming with that sound, across an open ocean, lying there on temporary ground.
There are very many beautiful things that happen in this song, and I want to know who helped with that, both the fiddle. And then that harmony.
That's Lily Mae Rishi, who's just, you know, she just exemplifies freedom to me in every way possible. And in a way, her fiddle and, again, sort of an accidental coincidence, I was the first lyric is on a floating lily island. It was about a giant. I had read in National Geographic about these giant Queen Victoria lily pads that could hold up to 100 pounds.
Wow!
So a person could actually float on a lily pad, which seems like Alice in Wonderland through the looking glass kind of idea. But that was the generation for that. But also her fiddle at the beginning of the song too. So coincidentally, two ideas about freedom and the word lily together. So.
And she's also the singer.
Yeah, she sings on there too. She didn't at first, but I really wanted to get her voice to be on there.
It's beautiful. When you work on a song like this, would you sit with Lily Mae in a room and make it, or how?
I did this one with the whole band, and then we asked her if she would sing on it later on after I'd put the vocals down. I asked her if she would come in there. She just really exemplifies freedom in all ways to me. She's totally a free person. She grew up in a band. She was on stage when she was 3 years old and traveling with her family band, playing music and on different stages and fairs and folk festivals and things like that. And she still sort of lives that way. And it just seems like she just breathes music all day long. And it seems like total freedom to me. So I don't know. She was very inspiring to me for that.
Is there something on this record you'd like me to play?
I don't know. It's so funny. You're playing to me. I'm hearing only the left channel where I'm at, and it's great to listen to these songs again, just with one side of it, because I'm hearing things I haven't heard in a long time.
So. I can't tell why that would be. Could we just one quick second ask the engineer if there's any reason?
No, it's okay. Let's keep it. Yeah. Okay. Like, yeah. Oh, Want and Able is interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
We got this left channel thing going on because I wrote this as with. These two characters in mind, almost like there would be like names, maybe like Pancho and Lefty, like Juan and Abel. Like Abel is like a Mexican name, you know, like Juan and Abel. But Want and Abel. And by the time he'd gotten finished, you know, it felt like I almost should, go approach like, I don't know, like a sort of maybe like a gay rights organization or something like that. It feels like something that could be used as a theme for an idea about fighting against something else. And these two characters are talking to each other, and they aren't able to do what they naturally already want to do or need to do. Outside forces are not allowing it. And that these two characters are telling each other how they either have the chance to fight it or that they're either unable to fight. So I recorded it with the left channel is I think it's the left channel has a low vocal and piano, and the right channel is a high vocal and guitar, and they're completely separate from each other. So that if you just turn the knob either direction, you either hear one or the other.
I didn't quite hear it there. Let me just start again because I didn't have the volume up. Yeah. There's a needle drop.
Because those crows are coming from, these are old hunting records. I found that. I found a portable record player from the 50s that you take out and go hunting. And these are records that you'd play to get crows to come around. There was a death cry of a crow and a crow and a raven, a crow and a something else fighting each other. So those are two different old records played at the wrong speed. They're played very slowed down, like 33 when they're actually 45s or something. So those are old hunting records to start off. Two people fighting or trying to come together, so I thought it would help out.
I just love the idea of people going hunting and bringing a record player. Perfect. Here we go.
Who is the who telling who what to do? Who is the
coming home. Well, one neighbor were crossing the road. One had a feeling there was something he was owed. But Abel broke it to him that there's a social code. So walk straight down the middle now and do what we're told. Walk straight down the middle now and do what we're told. Who is the who telling who what to do? Who is the who telling who what to do? Who is the who telling who what to do? Tell me who, tell me who, tell me who.
Do you get to sit around and by yourself and just play songs to either a room of no one or kids? Or
I play songs to my kids quite often just to see if what they react to, you know. And I like to play music recorded in the car to them too, because they don't lie. They tell you immediately if something's good or not, and that's a great place to be. If they react to something, that really tells me I'm on the right path.
Can you tell what it is that engages them? Is there how old now?
They're 8 and 6 now, and they don't, no, there's nothing in particular. I never know what they're going to like.
That's
and,
good. Remember the last thing you did for them, played for them that they did like?
They don't know the names of things. They just tell me, I like the song that says this, or the song that has the piano on at the beginning. That's what they say, and it's pretty funny.
I wonder about people who, they started playing music because they couldn't not make music. That had to be you, right? You had to make music.
Yeah.
I'd imagine.
But I also thought I'd never be able to do it. I didn't, no one ever said, you know, if you keep doing this, you'll be able to make records and you'll be able to go on tour. That was never told to me when I was a teenager. I was always assumed there was no chance in hell of me ever doing anything with it. I always played music because I loved it, and I'd play till 4 a.m. I just loved it to death. I had my whole bedroom when I was a teenager had nothing to do with anything but music. And a little bit of upholstery, that's about it, you know, but that was it, you know. And I was shocked when we finally did make a record. I think the first White Stripes 45 was the first record I made, and I think I held on to that record for a week, you know, picking it up. Matter of fact, I put it in the bathroom so that every time I was in there, I could pick it up and look at it. I was just so shocked, you know. It wasn't glory, it was just shock.
And first of all, I want to just say to everybody who does and plays music in their bedroom, a lesson to you, which is that have the passion for it. Always believe, you know. You never know what's going to happen, but if you love what you do, do what you do, and find a way to make that a part of your life, I guess is the first thing. But so you would do that to 4 a.m. Do you find yourself doing that now that's not project-based but just sitting and playing?
You have to sort of wake yourself up to me. You know, like if I see a guitar, I go over to pick it up, and sometimes now, and I'm 30, I'm like, damn, the guitar again? Man, somebody hand me an accordion or something. Like, sometimes you get into that kind of mode, and then a lot of times over the years, I thought, okay, well, I'll play guitar because I guess that's what people want me to do. I don't know. I'd rather be playing, you know, some xylophone or something on this song. But you do what you have to do, but you make concessions and you pick your battles about how it's going to be presented. You know, I could say, well, obviously, if I went out and read these lyrics out loud holding a piece of paper on a microphone with no music, that's not going to have the kind of appeal it would have if I had this kind of drum beat and this kind of melody to back it up. And I need those tricks to get you to pay attention to it. I'm fine with doing that. I'll do whatever tricks are necessary in my job to share something with somebody else. And it's just sort of picking those battles of, well, which ones do you want to use that will be the most effective and that I'll get something out of too.
And you do have the freedom to do that. But if you wanted to do a song that was an accordion with your words or somebody else's words, you could do that. And I think that's... I mean, anybody could do that. It's just in terms of getting it out to people, you have more of the ability than the buddy next door. But I think it's a good thing to think about for anybody who's new and playing music and so forth, that taking chances and not getting into one set way of doing things is always a good. There's so many styles on this record. You could say, oh, I pick up a guitar and this record's all about guitar. But I'll say to you, which is that, and you must know this, that there's so many things happening on this record. There's sometimes it sounds like I'm listening to a jazz record, and sometimes it sounds like there's a honky tonk a little to it.
Yeah.
And I like the way they all fall into place, so they don't feel like they're stuck. They're stuck in
That's
there,
great.
You know.
Yeah.
it's one thing I like about what you do, and I think your passion for that old music that has always been part of your music has always managed to fit right, and I think that's why it speaks. There's a common root in all of those things, and that's what you always feel like you're tapping into to me, whether you're playing a backwards loop of a steel guitar or that just exquisite fiddle that comes in on the song. So you dedicate this record to a couple of people. One of them was Florence Green. There was Grace Hopper, Amazing Grace Hopper. And then I don't remember the other one, somebody declare. Do you remember who you dedicated this record to?
Florence Green was she was the last surviving participant of World War One. And I wrote her name down to think about her as a possible character for one of the songs on the record. I can't remember if I actually applied that to something or not. It was so fast. But these were names I had written down, and I write down, very little, as I was saying before. But sometimes I put someone's name down and say, "Oh, okay. Well, you gotta. I can't play that on the piano and remember that name. I have to actually write that person's name down, or type it, or computer, or something like that." And anyhow, these were people that came up when I was thinking about characters, and they had incredible lives, but incredible lives in strange ways. And one of them's an anarchist or fight for freedom. And Amazing Grace Hopper did so much with the picoseconds, and she was an amazing scientist and mathematician for the Navy. And this is I don't know. It just came out when I was dedicating the record. I thought, oh, these names are still here. I'm going to dedicate it to them. And for some reason, that's right. This album starts off with a song called Three Women. I guess it ends with three women. So I don't know. It just made sense, I guess.
Beautiful. Thanks for your time.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. That's great to talk about all these. Getting great to hear it just the left channel. I can go back and think about things in rehearsal in a different way now.
Great. Have a good song. Good session today.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Bob. I'll talk to you soon.
Always good. Be well.
Okay.
Jack White, the new album's called Lazaretto. It comes out June 10th. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.